Welcome to the Organic Gardener Podcast. I'm your host, Jackie Beyer. Let's get growing.
Welcome to the show today. I'm very excited to introduce my guest, Jim Finley, who is the current manager of Seeds of Hope Community Garden, which is right here in Eureka. Jim's actually my neighbor and lives on the next creek over here. So he's going to tell you a little more about gardening in Montana. So welcome to the show, Jim.
Hello. How you doing? I'm doing good.
And
doing hot weather.
Yeah, so today is June 7th when we're recording, and it's just super hot in Montana here. We fortunately had some rain last week, so everything has grown. I mowed my lawn today, and it was like probably 8 inches tall, just crazy tall, kind of got away from me. So, but I love to mow the lawn. I know a lot of my guests have said that mowing the lawn is one of their least favorite activities, but to me, that's just one of my favorite ways to be in the garden. And I don't know, every time it seems like we mow our lawn, it gets a little thicker and a little lusher. So it's, to me, it's kind of fun. But anyway, enough about me. Jim, welcome to the show and tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay. I was born and raised in Kalispell. And then I'm currently retired from the U.S. Geological Survey. I was a hydrologic technician there for 29 years. And when I retired, then I found a good deal on the price on property up here in Eureka. And so we moved up here when I retired. And then I was saw an advertisement in the paper for Master Gardener classes. And, you know, that was a 3-year program of once a week type courses and put on by the County Extension Service.
Mm-hmm.
And then as their community service project, they decided to start this community garden.
Oh!
Community garden.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's how that got found with it.
Oh, I didn't know that. And, okay.
And so the original intent was to have garden beds available for people who couldn't garden where they live because of the microclimates that exist around Eureka.
Mm-hmm.
Or they were rental properties and couldn't, you know, or there's just something about their, you know, mm-hmm. Living
situation.
Conditions that they
mm-hmm.
couldn't garden at home. So this, you know, provided an opportunity for people to rent garden beds and have a place they can set up a garden. Plus, also, we set up as a charter to donate food to the food pantry.
Oh, really?
And senior center. Yeah. And we've been averaging about 700 pounds of produce that we grow every year. Last year, it was a little bit low because I had a couple of crops that didn't perform well. I mean, so we only did 598 pounds that we donated to the food pantry and senior center. But then this year we had a kind of a normal turnover rate. We usually have a few people. We have about 25 people that rent beds, and we have I think it's 37 beds that are available for rent.
Mm-hmm.
And 39 beds are available for rent, excuse me. And then there's 10 additional beds that are, the rental beds are 4 feet by 8 feet. And some of them are doubles. You know, they're actually 4 feet by 16, but they count as two beds. And then along the fence line, I've got 2.5 foot wide beds that are 8 feet long. And that's where I grow most of the food pantries and senior center donations.
Oh, okay.
And so the anyway, this year, you know, we had 3 people drop out and we had 7 people that wanted rental beds and on our open house. We always had an open house in about the middle of April.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when we sign everybody up, and most everybody keeps the same bed they had the previous year. And some people have multiple beds. One lady has 6 beds.
No way.
And we have a lot. Yeah.
Now, how much does it cost for a bed again? Did you tell us that much?
$20 for the first, $20 for the first bed, and then $10 for additional beds.
Oh, that's a great deal.
Well, it gets better because we also provide a drip irrigation system.
Wow.
And the water that we get is from the Glen Lake irrigation system. And, that is through the county fairgrounds. The community garden is actually located on the fairgrounds property, right? Next to the horse barn and riding arena, excuse me. And let's see where.
And you know what I found out? It's off of Highway 93, which I had no idea there was even an entrance to the fairgrounds on Highway 93 until I talked to Lois, who was the fair secretary, right? She's in charge of the fair. And she's the one, when she gave me your number, she said, well, go check it out. And I was like, well, where is it anyway? And she's telling me, and I'm like, wait. And then when she explained to me that you go in from Highway 93, I was like, I never knew there was an entrance on this side. So you learn something new every year.
Yeah. Well, generally speaking, the Highway 93 side is, will get you over towards the baseball diamond, baseball field there.
Mm-hmm.
And then, also, if you just stay on there's an old paved road and it only goes back about a tenth of a mile, and that's where our gardens are. And then you would go past the gardens, and then you're in the Kidsville area of the fair.
Oh, okay. Yep.
So you can actually get to the community garden from either side.
Oh, so you just got to cut through Kidsville at the fair?
Yeah, well, they have the Kidsville area always set up every year. And this year we're expanding the size of our beds to, we're going to add an additional 8 double beds. So we're going to be adding 16 more bed rentals and also more growing area for the food pantry and senior center.
The senior center? Is that what you said? The senior center. Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Got a little excited that there was going to be some kind of Zinnia thing. Okay.
No.
Now, the beds come with the dirt and everything, right? Yeah.
I'm sorry, what?
They're deep beds that come with the dirt in them and everything, right?
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's pretty nice set up there.
And we have several beds that are to accommodate people that have back issues or very elderly. In fact, we have several people that are in their 80s, and I think a couple of them are in their 90s. And we started off originally with 3 of those beds that are 2 feet deep, and now we've added 4 more of those. So we've got quite a few of those type of beds.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that's been a great big introduction. I always kind of like to start out the show actually talking about your very first gardening experience. Like, who were you with? What'd you grow? How old were you? Were you like a little kid or were you an adult? Like, tell us about your very first gardening experience. I guess it would be down in Kalispell. Is that, you said you grew up in Kalispell?
That's correct. I couldn't tell you because I grew up with a garden. My dad had a garden probably from the time I was born.
Mm-hmm.
And so as soon as I was old enough to go out and pull weeds, that's about my first gardening experience.
Okay.
I grew up with a garden.
Now, do you have brothers and sisters? Do they garden too?
My older brother does. I don't have any sisters, and my younger brother doesn't.
Uh-huh.
And my older brother does more decorative type gardening. He likes to do wildflowers and plants, and he'll go out in the woods and he'll find something he thinks looks interesting, and then he'll add it to his garden.
Oh, cool. That's kind of hard to do sometimes, isn't it, to get wildflowers to grow in your garden, though?
It is, especially, certain plants are definitely pH sensitive.
Mm-hmm.
And like, you can't transplant huckleberries down into the valleys very easily because they prefer an acidic soil. And most of our soil around here is very alkaline.
And don't they also like a higher elevation?
That's true. I think the elevation does make a difference to those.
I was just thinking, like, I just went to Glacier Park yesterday, or Friday, and it was so incredibly beautiful. But there were tons of flowers there, and I was thinking, those flowers are blooming there, but they wouldn't be blooming here because of that elevation difference. And just, they're a different kind of wildflower. I don't know if you would get those, some of those to go.
Yeah, some of them, if you bring them down and kind of plant them in the same type of environment, you know, like some of them, like, shady sides, you know, shady areas or cooler areas, they'll grow and bloom, but they'll bloom earlier.
Yep.
And probably not as long.
Mm-hmm.
And, because the mountain ones are more inclined to bloom right after, you know, all the snow goes off. And, I'm trying to remember, there was some kind of a lady slipper my dad used to plant along the north side of our house.
Oh,
and
really?
He went and got those. Yeah, he picked those out of the woods and around the Yak River area.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, and they did okay. You know, they'd get a few blooms every year. And but they didn't last very long. You always have to keep replanting them.
Yep, we saw some really pretty lady slippers. Those are cool.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, then, how about sharing with us, like, what does organic gardening or earth-friendly gardening mean to you?
Basically, organic gardening is we're using non-concentrated salt fertilizers, and you know that just provide your basic nutrients, and using more manure type based fertilizers, or you know, compost.
Mm-hmm.
From decomposed vegetable matter, and so a lot of that material is going to have live bacteria in it, and so you'll have more of your, you know, micronutrients and things like that. The other thing about organic is there's no using volatile organic compounds to control weeds and pests, which can lead to, you know, if they're used properly, can certainly lead to pollution problems, or you can have some long-term detrimental effects on your, you know, wherever you're applying it.
Mm-hmm.
And, I'm not as strongly against use of things like Roundup and 2,4-D as other people are, but those are things that you really, you don't want to use them regularly. You know, I think that's one of the issues, like with, you know, your wheat farmers and corn farmers, where they use it every year. That's kind of like my philosophy on that is kind of like giving penicillin to kids every time they get a cold. Eventually, they'll start developing resistances that you're trying to control.
Mm-hmm.
And so the whenever I have a pest issue, like cabbage worms, I use BT thuringus, which works great.
What is it called?
Controls.
BT what?
Thuringus, I think that's the way it's pronounced. I may be wrong on that.
Okay.
But it's a for chewing worms. It works on tent caterpillars. In fact, it actually worked better on tent caterpillars than anything else, because on tent caterpillars, the tent will protect the caterpillar from diazinon spraying.
Oh.
Because that requires, you know, direct contact with the worm, whereas the BT thuringus will be all on the foliage that the tent caterpillars eat, and once they adjust it, then it becomes parasitic to them.
Oh, okay.
It's a live control, but it works really, it wipes out the worms.
Okay.
And it works on, you know, like cabbage worms and all kinds of chewing animals like that. And, you know, safe for soap works on aphids. And we had a really bad aphid attack a year and a half ago down there at the community garden, and it actually defoliated broccoli plants.
Oh.
And, you know, we stopped into the station by spraying them with the soap, but the vegetables were gone, and they couldn't save them.
Oh.
And it was that bad of an attack for aphids. I'd never seen anything like that before.
What do you think caused that? Was it like just a dry year, or like they just happened to come through that year, or just anything particular?
Yeah, something environmental was just ideal for them to grow. Mm-hmm. And it came late in the year, too. It was in, if I remember, I think it was like first week of September.
Oh, just when you're about to harvest.
That was it. We were harvesting side shoots at that time on broccoli, and the cabbages were actually getting affected negatively by them, too.
Oh.
And that was the other thing. It all went for the plants related to the cold, like your... there were some people that had some kohlrabi that were, affected by it.
Oh.
And so it's just, other plants that were in the beds didn't seem to be affected by it. They were pretty specific to the cabbage family.
Interesting.
Yeah, like I said, I've never seen anything like that before.
Okay.
Hopefully I don't see it again.
So, who or what then inspired you to start using organic techniques? Was it like learning in that master class or somewhere else? Or
what was that again?
What inspired you? Yeah, to use organic techniques.
I'm kind of inclined to just do the organic first.
Mm-hmm.
Because when I grew up, we had horses, so we always used manure and aged manure for fertilizing the garden and weeding, so we didn't really do any sprays for insects or anything like that. And probably more on the fertilizer end of it that I have a tendency to be more of the organic protocols. I've read several books on organic gardening and stuff like that, and I'm always looking for new information.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Okay. And then is that basically how you learned how to garden organically, from like reading books and just kind of growing up in that? Basically, it sounds like your family was sort of geared that way.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. How about, tell us about something that grew well last season. Like, what was something that grew really well last summer? Was there a crop that was kind of prolific?
Well, let's see. I've had, in my home garden, I do real well with tomatoes, mm-hmm. But I've got a high tunnel one of those hoops,
mm-hmm.
and so I grow them in there. And then in the garden, the community garden, do well with broccoli, and normally we do well with cucumbers, but that was one of the ones that I had a problem with last year.
Oh, what happened with the cucumbers?
They just didn't grow very well.
Oh, uh-huh.
And the other one that surprised me too was I was growing some snap peas, and they didn't grow very well. Did great on bush beans, and the tomato plants did real well, and it did well on zucchini.
Oh, uh-huh.
And that's, now my home garden, the soil is really alkaline. It's almost about the same alkalinity as a bar of soap.
Oh.
I mean, it's up there in the 8.6, I think is what it is. And so I have a hard time growing squashes.
Oh.
And so, I don't even try and grow zucchini up here. In fact, so I just, I figure after a few years of keep putting in, compost, I'll get it under control where I can, effectively grow them. And the last couple of years I've been so busy with the community garden, mm-hmm. I've actually neglected my home garden.
Uh-huh. I can see that. The community garden looks really good, though. I was there, I stopped by yesterday and kind of looked around. I mean, it was locked, so I just looked from my car, but it looked like there was a lot, mm-hmm. of stuff growing already. So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, things are doing good. In fact, one of the things that did really well, I tried an experiment. I actually learned this one from Todd and Rebecca Elysium.
Uh-huh.
Is I planted fall spinach, and then rather than pulling it up at the end of the season, I let it overwinter. and it came up this spring. And in May, I did four harvests every week, and I got about a pound and a half of spinach off of a 6-foot row. And, you know, so that's one way, if you really want early spinach, want a lot of it, you know, let your plant, you know, plant it and then throw a fall harvest and then let the plants overwinter. And, because it, one of the things that the community garden seems to have a hard time with is when they plant spinach in the spring, by the time June rolls around, it starts bolting.
Right.
And the overwinter spinach bolted almost the same day that the others, other folks' spinach bolted.
We've had one batch of spinach bolt already on us.
Yeah.
That we planted.
And but the overwinter spinach, I was getting leaves the size of my hand.
Mm-hmm. It's been a good year, don't you think?
It's almost like Swiss chard.
It's been a really good year for gardening, I think. Our spinach, the regular spinach, I just started picking it like 2 days ago, and it's huge. I mean, it needs to be picked really bad. But like I said, one batch already went to seed just before I ever got any salads out of it or anything. It just kind of like overnight turned before it really got big. But
Home garden, I planted, germ seed in my home garden, and it's already bolted. Mm-hmm. And I got the seed.
Mm-hmm. How about something you're excited to do different this year or something you're going to try new?
I haven't really thought about anything this year that I'm trying new. But one of the things that I've been thinking about, you know, like sometime down the road, I'd like to play with is it's called hydroponics, where grow a fish tank. And then you use the water of the fish tank to hydroponically feed your vegetable plants, and they play in the water and it goes back to the fish tank.
All right, Jim, you're going to have to start listening to my podcast. Yeah, they call it aquaponics. And I just interviewed this woman. I interviewed a woman named Liz, who has a place called Genesis Clock Farm down in California. And then another guest of mine is a friend of my podcasting group, Marabou Latour, who has her whole podcast is called Visionary Aquaponics. And I interviewed both of them just recently. Liz was episode 49 or 48. And they talk a lot about that and the growing aquaponics movement and how, people are growing. Aquaculture is fish farming. And then hydroponics is the growing in the water. And so they're kind of mixing it together. So instead of using chemicals, they're using the natural fish fertilizer. So I think it's interesting. I got to say, after talking to Liz from the Genesis Clock Farm, all I could picture is like supermarkets going to aquaponics so that the supermarkets are actually growing. Like I had this total vision of supermarkets just growing the vegetables right there and there would be no more transportation for produce. And you would just have these giant fish tanks in the supermarket and you would, instead of having like produce people, you're going to, I don't know. This is like my sci-fi George Orwell, like fantasy dream, but that was like all I could think of after I got off the phone with her doing that interview was like, is this where our supermarkets are going to end up going? But I don't know. I would have a hard time with it myself. Cause I can't even keep a fish in a tank or a bird in a cage or like, you know, a chicken in a pen.
Yeah. You would definitely need a real large operation for a supermarket.
Yeah,
and
but they say they're growing like incredible.
Like if you have a high rise, if you have a forty-story building that was growing, you know, stuff on that fashion. And then there's.
I mean, it sounds like it grows a lot more produce in the amount of space and faster turnover. You know, she was saying she could grow almost anything in 3 weeks. You know, tomatoes maybe took like 2 months from seed to fruit, but just it sounded like their growing times were incredibly fast. Maybe produce. I mean, you know, I'm a dreamer, you know, and I'm like thinking, you know, space age, maybe in the 21st or 22nd century, whatever. But that was all I could think of when she was describing it. I was like, well, you know, is that where our supermarkets are going to go someday? look into the aquaponics. I'm curious to see what you think about it. Yeah, I think we're going to have to go there. It seems like in the last 2 weeks, the news about the climate and alternative energy and alternative solutions and organic gardening has just been like tenfold. I feel like I can't turn on the news without hearing people talking about it finally after all this time. But, well, cool. So you're going to look into aquaponics. Sounds good.
Yeah, I've been thinking about it. Yeah, I'm exactly afraid of how I was going to do it.
Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds it's very new and there's lots of different things to look at.
It's just something I want to play with. You know, I get an idea and I'll think about it for a while. Sometimes I'll put it into action.
Mm-hmm. Cool. She said, like, the biggest thing I took away from talking to Kim was know your fish. Know what kind of fish grow locally in your area. Mm-hmm. Learn about the fish. So, but, you know, I was really excited to hear her talk about, you know, they have trout down there and she's in Southern California. And they have rainbow trout in their little system. So I thought, well, that sounded cool. But then, you know, I don't know. So, well, tell us about something that didn't work so well this season. You kind of mentioned, what was it, the cucumbers? Is that, would you say that was it?
Yeah, last year the cucumbers, and then this year I've had to replant my beans and replant my peas.
Already?
I already had to, because very, very poor emergence out of the soil. I suspect robins.
Oh,
but you know, it could be after I put them in the ground, robins won't pop along there and, you know, picking them back out of the dirt. So
I did notice, like, my peas are just coming up and I planted two or three different packets of seeds and it just, like, parts of my rows are just, there's nothing there and I'm just wondering if, like, some of my seeds were better than my other seeds. Or I do know when I was watering, there were some places where maybe I didn't get the seeds really coming out of the ground before they sprouted. Mm. It was kind of more my fault, but.
Well, the thing that surprised me is I would dig in the holes to see what, you know, if they rotted.
Uh-huh.
And there was no trace of, you know, trace of the seed being there.
Oh, could be.
And then, you know, so I'm thinking something must have pulled them out. And so.
Who was I talking to? Suspicious of. Marcy Hines was just on my last episode, and I don't know where she lives. I want to say she lives up Pinkham somewhere, but I'm not even certain. But she was saying she planted the carrots so perfectly this year, so she wouldn't have to do a lot of thinning and spread them out. And she turned around the next day, and there were the robins, and they were just flinging seeds everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. Could be the robins, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, how about something you find is easy to grow and is generally successful every time?
Generally, I have pretty good luck with tomatoes and Pac-Man broccoli.
Oh, okay. Pac-Man
broccoli. Yeah, I like that brand because they do the best of anything I've tried so far on side chews.
Mm-hmm. And is that the variety then? Is there like a, or is that the company?
Yeah, it's a variety. Yeah, it's a hybrid. And what it does, it's not a GMO, but it's a, you know, the hybrid, and it's been around for years. But sometimes the heads will be, you know, classic big heads. Sometimes the initial head won't be that big, but you cut the head off, and then the side shoots start developing, and then you know. Just as they're ready to start opening up like they're going to go to seed, you prune those off, and then it'll send out another arm shoot, and you keep fertilizing and watering it all summer long. And pretty soon you're going to have a chest-high plant that that's about 2 feet across, and you'll get a half a shopping bag full of broccoli out of it.
Really? All right. I'm going to have to look into that.
That's one of the reasons why I grew up there for the community garden is because I'll get probably half again the weight in broccoli from the side shoots that I will from the original head.
Mm-hmm. I like that. I know Mike grows broccoli that gets a lot of side shoots, so either that might be what he does grow. To be honest with you, I don't know what kind of broccoli it is, but there is one that he likes that does have a lot of those side shoots, so we get extra broccoli because broccoli is my all-time favorite vegetable. And I already wrote that we did not plant enough broccoli for this year. Is my goal for 2016 already in my journal. Plant more broccoli.
Right.
If we're going to have this, like, my husband built a mini farm this year, and if we're going to have a mini farm, to me, like, it should have a lot more broccoli in it. Sorry.
What I want something that I completely forgot about last year. Try something new.
Okay.
And I'd heard that with cabbages, if you don't pull the plant out after you've cut the head off, it'll grow side shoots.
Oh.
And I did that last year, and sure enough, up from the side leaves would be smaller heads of cabbage pop out.
Oh, how cute. Were they delicious?
Oh, yeah, they're great. They got up to about softball size.
They
weren't as big. But the thing was, there was like two or three of them, some of them four. And so I almost doubled my weight in cabbages just by letting the side shoots off a cabbage grow.
Nice.
Yeah, so that's something that I'm going to baby along this year is maybe pull the heads a little bit earlier just to see if I can get bigger side shoots.
Now, do you want to explain to the audience exactly what you mean by side shoots, just in case somebody's wondering what exactly that means?
Well, like on if you know how Brussels sprouts grow, where the little cabbage heads on the Brussels sprouts grow off on the side of the main stem. On a cabbage, the main stem is fairly short, but that's where your leaves are that cradle the cabbage head. And then when you cut that head off, you still got your two or three rings of leaves around the base. And between those leaves, cabbage heads will grow out sideways from that and then upward.
Oh, okay.
And so, yeah, so basically that's what they are. They're a side shoot off of because the main head's been cut off, so the growth comes off the side of the main stem.
All right, cool. All right, well, listeners are going to like that tip, I'm sure. That sounds great. And I always love where you can get, you know, I tell people all the time, I'm very results oriented. So I like to hear when people are getting more produce for their plant. Cause it's a lot of work, you know, gardening is a lot of work. And so if you're going to do it, you want to be strategic. So that sounds like a very strategic move to make. How about something you would steer new gardeners away from that you find is typically challenging to grow in our climate?
Pole beans.
Yep, my husband says that too.
About the time pole beans get going, you're within a week of the first frost. Mm-hmm. And that's the biggest. Some people can do it. You know, I worked for a guy down in Kalispell, and that's all he planted was pole beans.
Oh, really?
And he did real well with it. Yeah, and he always did real well with them. But I've never been able to grow pole beans very well. I mean, like I said, as soon as they would start coming on, then, you know, I was within a couple of weeks of the first frost, so it's kind of like you watch something grow all summer long, and finally when it gets going, the season ends.
Yeah, I know, because I was just asking Mike, I'm like, how come you don't plant the, he used to plant like a little teepee, you know, and the kids could crawl in there, the grandkids and stuff, and I was like, how come you don't do that anymore? He's like, because it's too tough to get the beans, always end up freezing on me, and I'm just going to do bush beans. They grow better, closer to the ground, stay warmer. The bush beans are more prolific. So, yeah.
Yeah,
so I wonder what that guy in Kalispell was doing.
What's that again?
What do you think that guy in Kalispell was doing that was successful? Do you think he was just happened to be in those little microclimate pockets?
He had a lot of sheep, so maybe he just got the fertilizer on them.
Oh. Cool. We're like looking to get some sheep this year. So that'd be nice. I wonder if that'll help.
Well, okay.
Okay, which activity is your least favorite activity to do in the garden? Is there something you just have to force yourself to go out there and make yourself do?
I pretty much have to put a gun to my head to go weeding.
You do?
Yeah, I hate weeding.
Okay.
Because it's not just a matter of going and pulling them out of the ground. But the quackgrass and that other weed that I was talking about, I have to dig down a foot. And the thistles, you have to dig down a foot to get to the root, the feeder root.
Okay. Do you have any tips for like?
Yeah, like if you follow a thistle all the way down, you'll find that there's a horizontal root, and that's what they all grow off of.
Mm-hmm.
And it's usually down there about 12, 14 inches.
Do you do any things to like reduce the number of weeds you have? Got any tips for anything like that? Like, I know I tell listeners a lot that we just dug a well, and before we dug our deep well, we had a real water shortage. So our water, like when you're packing water for a garden, you are only watering the roots. You do not let that water go anywhere along the side. So our weed, like I already can tell, it's just huge this year, how many more weeds there are out there and how much our weeding is going to, I can't even imagine it. So compared to like when you're just shooting at the root, to me, that's the big, you know, and then we mulch and, you know, there's a few other water or things. I know a lot of my guests have talked about putting that, what is it called? Some kind of cover, like a plastic.
Oh, the weed barrier?
The weed barrier down. Do you do any of that kind of thing or mulching or anything to reduce
weeds? We did the weed barrier at the community garden and we just did that for the whole section of it. And, you know, and that helped, but we still, on the beds that I got growing along the fence line, the quackgrass grows up over the top of the weed barrier and grows up into those beds. Mm-hmm. And, but like at home, I've thought of just starting a new garden and just, but not plant anything in it, just basically summer follow it where it's rototill it every week and not let anything grow in it. And I don't seem to follow through with that plan, but that would be the best way to get rid of all the quackgrass and the thistles.
Mm-hmm. I know my husband is like super picky. Like when we dig a new bed for the very first time, like even the tiniest little piece of quackgrass, like it can be like the size of half of my pinky or something, it has got to go. If he sees any of those tiny little white roots, he's like, get it out of there, get that quackgrass. The more you can get out when you're digging that initial bed seems to help. But yeah, a lot of my listeners have said this. I mean, a lot of my guests have said the same thing. Quackgrass, it's a tough one for sure. And Megan Kane from Wisconsin, the Creative Vegetable Gardener, she talks a lot about one of her strategies is to not have grass up against the edge of her beds. She puts like a border around all of her gardens. And if you look at her website, you can see pictures and she illustrates it really well with her photographs of, and then I think that kind of helps reduce some of the quackgrass in her garden. But yep, nope, you're never going to get rid of all of it. It's definitely a, one of my guests, who was it? I think it was Kathy O'Leary was saying one year she tried to like make something out of the rhizomes, like string entire tomatoes up with the quackgrass. I thought that was so cute. Just, she was just like, I'm just going to do something with this and make it useful somehow because it's so strong and everywhere and it never, you know, the roots go down forever.
Yeah.
So I thought that was a pretty, you know, inventive, creative idea to try to get along with your quackgrass. All right. So, Jim, on the flip side, what's your favorite activity to do in the garden?
Eating, harvest. Yeah, picking and eating.
Okay, cool. What's your favorite vegetable? Anything? Or
probably my favorite vegetable is currently right now it's mustard greens. I like mustard greens a lot.
Okay.
They're, if you eat them raw, they're wasabi hot, but if you cook them, then they're actually better than collards or turnip greens.
Wasabi hot. All right. Well, so one of my questions.
They will scorch you.
Really? Oh, I like that. I was just looking at wasabi peas in the store last night. So one of my questions down the line is going to be, do you have any special techniques for cooking weird or unusual foods? Are you going to use that? Like, you got a recipe for cooking mustard greens, like a wasabi type of anything?
Mostly on those, when I'm cooking those, I'll just steam them and then maybe throw in, like fried, you know, like crumbled bacon. Oh. But just basically steamed with, sometimes I don't even add salt to it. I just steam them and that's good to go there. One of my favorite is last year I grew this banana squash. It's they're quite long. They're about 20 inches long. And I just slice off a half and about 3/4 inch off of each slice and then put the squash back in the refrigerator. And then the part that I slice off, I would throw that in my stir fries.
Mm-hmm.
And also like to stir fry cucumbers.
Cucumbers and, in a stir fry?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, I like cucumbers for my stir fry, especially if they're starting, you know, like you buy cucumbers and they start to get a little bit wilted.
Mm-hmm.
I'll just chop them up, toss them in a stir fry.
Okay.
And so it's probably not the unusual vegetable or weird vegetable, but it's probably an unusual recipe for a common vegetable.
Yeah, I like that. I like that a lot. That's a new twist I could add into my question when people are like, what do you mean?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Well, I couldn't, you know, when your question said weird vegetable, I was trying to visualize a weird vegetable. What's weird to some people, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Although a lot of people have no idea what a kohlrabi is, but
mm-hmm.
And a lot of people don't realize that, you know, I know people that grew up eating kohlrabi didn't know you could eat the leaves.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
And the leaves on kohlrabi make good steamed greens.
To explain to people what kohlrabi looks like or how it grows or what it is, anyway.
Yeah, basically, it's related to the cabbages, and it forms a round ball. One variety is about the size of a softball, and the flesh is white, and the skin is very fibrous, so you peel the skin off. It's actually best eaten raw as a raw cut vegetable, you know, for dips or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But the old traditional way of eating it was to boil it. And most people that grew up eating boiled kohlrabi hate it.
Oh.
And because it tastes like boiled cabbage.
Oh.
But it's also kind of a turnipy flavor too. And so it's, you know, one of the problems of growing turnips in this is they're a great site for us to plant for catching any worms that want to eat your root crops. Because everything eats turnips. And so if you like a turnip, a good alternative is grow kohlrabi because the bulb grows above ground.
It grows above ground? Okay.
Yeah, the bulb is above ground. Yeah.
Oh, right.
Completely above ground, yeah. There is a variety of kohlrabi that they use in competition growing up in Alaska. It grows to, in here in Eureka, it'll grow to the size of a pineapple.
Oh.
Up in Alaska, where they have 24-hour sunlight up in Fairbanks,
mm-hmm.
they get up to bigger kohlrabis up there that I think are 2 feet tall.
No.
But, you know, just the bulb. Yeah, it's just huge.
Wow. Cool.
But yeah, if you like kohlrabi, I mean, if you really like kohlrabi, grow the Cossack variety. That's what it's called. It's Cossack.
Like COSS? And, or you want to spell?
Yeah, it's AK, I think it is. Or it might be ACK. But,
mm-hmm. See. Okay.
But even when they're huge, like I said, they're like the size of a pineapple,
uh-huh.
They're crisp and tasty all the way through. They're not woody or fibrous.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Uh-huh.
I'll have to try that.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
And they're good in stir fries too.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you can put just about anything in a stir fry, don't you think? I mean, I have not tried a cucumber, but just about anything else. How about, tell us about the best crop you ever grew. Was there one year that everything was just like so prolific and productive and just you had so many, you know, tomatoes or huckleberries or raspberries or something that you just didn't know what to do? Probably not.
A little over maybe 20 years ago when I was in the Flathead, there was this one year where I had a prolific crop of broccoli and other vegetables. I grew a banana squash down there that I wound up canning that for pumpkin pie filling. But it was one of those years where everything grew perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And canning is one of my hobbies, so I had canned vegetables for years after that year.
Okay.
But yeah, I'd go out and get a shopping bag full of broccoli almost every week.
Wow, that's nice. What's the best gardening advice you've ever received?
Best gardening advice? Let's see. I had to think about that one. Let's see. Oh, your traditional spring crops. Plant them for a fall harvest.
Okay.
Like spinach and peas and stuff like that. If you plant them in August for a lot of those things are frost tolerant. And so if you can get through those two first frosts in September, there's a good chance you'll have a garden that'll go halfway through October.
Oh, that's a good tip.
Kale is a good one. They always say kale tastes best when it's been frosted.
Oh.
And you can actually grow kale up in November. And it overwinters too. If you wanted to have carrots in the spring, you plant carrots in the summer, and then rather than harvesting them in October, you just leave them in the ground, and if the ground's not frozen, you can harvest them whenever.
That's what that Kathy O'Leary was saying. She said she just puts a ton of mulch on there, and then she'll just she'll put plastic over it and dig them up all through the winter and into the spring. And she said they're the freshest, sweetest carrots. You just dig them right out of the garden all winter long.
Mm-hmm. And you can do the same thing with parsnips too.
Mm-hmm. I knew somebody that did that too.
Yeah. That was probably the best advice, for a season extending, because that way about the time they say you can first start working the soil, March, April, whatever, you can be going out and picking, your root crops and having fresh garden produce that way.
Especially spinach. I like that. Good tip. Plant your traditional spring crops, plant them for a fall harvest.
Mm-hmm. And then let them overwinter.
Yeah. Last year, I think, would have been tough with that. We had that early frost. But some, like even kale or probably broccoli, I don't know. Kale, we're going to plant for the first time this year, with the new green smoothie movement. I've never planted kale, but we're going to try it this year. Some of my other guests said that same thing, that kale winters well. Tell us about the fair. Like, have you entered the fair yourself? Tell us about the fair.
Only thing I've actually entered into the produce section is one year I entered for largest rutabaga. Okay. I had a rutabaga that had two tabrets, and it was about the size of a chicken.
Oh my gosh.
And in fact, it actually looked like a chicken, but
okay.
Most of my fair entries, I get blue ribbons for, I did get largest blue ribbon, largest rutabaga, but I've gotten some blue ribbons for my canning entries.
Okay, tell us about that. What kind of canning have you done in things?
I don't like canned beets or when the frost was eminent, and I had a bunch of immature cucumbers. I made gherkins and pickled gherkins from the immature. I picked the ones that were firm, that they were, if they were soft, and I didn't use them. And they made great, great pickles. I didn't get the blue ribbon that I thought I deserved for those. But I've done another one that I did was I have this recipe for making a corn silk jelly, where you take the yellow, you take corn silk and you cut off the brown part, and then you just boil them and then strain them, and then you add enough pectin and sugar to set it up, and that makes a good jelly. It's a very light flavored, almost it's not a real strong flavored jelly, but it's but it's real easy one to make, and they don't have to do a lot of straining with it, because you don't even have to use a jelly bag to strain. I just use a colander.
Cool. I was telling one guest that one year, Mike, I was really sick, and it was just right when we were doing the corn harvest, and Mike, there were only a few ears of corn, but he somehow fed me the broth from cooking the corn. And to me, it was like a vegetarian version of chicken noodle soup. Like, it just healed me in 2 hours. Like, I had been so sick and I ate that, and like 2 hours later I was healthy. And it was just, and somebody had suggested that maybe it came from some of the medicinal properties in the corn silk.
I don't know.
So I wonder if that jelly might have some of that too. So, yeah.
I've never eaten enough of it to find out. Because, I don't use that much jelly, but it is a neat way to, if you like jelly on toast or something like that, that's a good way to make a really economical and easy jelly.
Cool. All right. That might be some fun for some listeners to try. So you just take the silk and kind of boil it down, okay. And just strain it.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, you cut off the brown part so that it'll be about the color of honey. In fact, might have to double check. Might actually have to add food coloring to it, to yellow food coloring.
Oh.
But, it's been a long time since I made it, so I'm going to have to think about that one.
Okay.
But if somebody wants to try it without the food coloring. If it doesn't look very appetizing, add one drop.
Okay. How about a favorite tool that you like to use? Like, if you had to move and could only take one tool with you, what could you not live without?
It's a hole with the blade is a triangular point. The blade just comes down to a point, but in the shape of a triangle. And that thing does an amazing job of pulling up dandelion.
Oh, okay.
Because it goes right into the ground, and then it won't get the whole root, but it'll cut deep enough into the dandelion that it'll, you can get down about 3-4 inches into the onto the root, the tap root on the dandelion, and then pop it out of the ground.
Nice.
And you just go straight down, and then give it a quick turn, and the dandelion pops up, and it's done.
Cool. That's a great tip for listeners. Mm-hmm. How about, okay, so here's my question that I struggle with. Eating or harvesting vegetables or fruit on time? It seems to me that everything always comes up at the same time. Got any tips for, taking care of your produce so it doesn't go bad?
As far as, extending fruits without actually having a can or something like that?
Yeah, it just seems like I'll go down to the garden to pick salad for dinner, and I end up with two giant baskets of salad, and it's late in the afternoon.
Oh, right.
And so if I wash it, it's going to be soggy. And by the time I get to town and take it to a friend's house or something, it's gone bad. And it just seems like there's always a ton of stuff all at once.
Yeah, usually on salads and kind of, I usually try and, for my own personal garden, I don't plant a lot of lettuce and spinach and endive is one of the ones I like too, at once. And I'll do a succession planting, but I do my succession plantings about a month apart.
Oh, okay.
That way, because, some people I see they recommend planting them once a week, and I'm thinking, the way the weather is around here, you can plant things 2 weeks apart and they'll ripen at the same time.
Right? It does do that. Totally. I think so too.
And so I do it about a month apart. And that way you don't run into that problem.
Okay. And, I'm glad you said that. Because I was looking down at some things and I'm like, gosh, am I just going crazy this year? Like, those things were planted almost 2-3 weeks apart and they're almost the same size. I have heard people say that.
I tried doing lettuce starch, I planted the seeds in the pots, and then I put out and I transplanted them out when they were about 3 inches tall.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next day, right in amongst the lettuce, I planted the lettuce seed.
Mm-hmm.
Well, after it got over its transplant shock, the other lettuce that I planted some seed had caught up to it.
Yep.
And so, there's that.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So I don't know. All right. Well, a month apart. Yeah, that sounds good.
Just basically spacing that. You know, don't plant as much, and then leave room. The other thing too, some plants, you know, that get kind of tall, like your broccoli, and tomato plants. I can all plant. Now, what I do with our raised bed gardens at the community garden, I'll have a 6-foot row of down the middle of a 3-foot wide or 2.5-foot wide box of tomato plants, and then completely around the perimeter, 6 inches wide, is where I put all the carrots. You know, for the companion planting thing, and that grows well. But then in between the tomato plants, I'll put in lettuce. Because in summertime.
Oh.
And so far I haven't had a real bumper crop yet, but it will, you know, at least it grows in the shade so it doesn't bolt as quick.
Yeah, but, you know, see, like, sometimes I think that would be good for me because it's the bumper crop that, like, is what gets me. I only need a little, like, Mike doesn't really eat a lot of lettuce, so it's just me, and it just seems like there's always tons of lettuce or tons of spinach or, like, radishes. We have so many radishes right now. I'm just like, what are we going to do with all these? Cause, you know, because, like, how many radishes do you put on a salad? So
yeah, that's another one that worked great for fall planting with radishes.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and another thing, too, some worms that will eat your root crops, like radishes and turnips. Are more active in the spring than they are in the fall. You know, like your wireworms and some of your root maggots, they don't seem to be as active. And, you know, so I've had better luck growing turnips in August.
Oh, okay, good to know. All right. I always feel like, to me, it just always seems like you're kind of rushing to get things ready because the season seems so short here that you've always got to get everything in the ground, like at the quickest possible moment that you possibly can every year, because either it's going to bolt or it needs, you know, like corn needs as much time as you can possibly get to grow it, you know? So it seems to me like it's either, you either got to get in the ground before it gets too hot, like, you know, your peas and your broccoli and things, cause they're going to bolt. Or the earth spinach, like we're already talking here, it's June and our spinach is bolting. Or, you know, so I don't really ever think about being able to do succession planning. But, yeah, there are, I guess, a few things that you can plant in August more that we should try.
Right. And then also, too, like I'm working on the theory. I haven't fully proved it yet. But I think that because June has the longest daylight hours of a day. I think that has more to do with the causing spinach to bolt than the actual heat of the day.
Oh.
Because, I had spinach growing in my high tunnel. I can't remember why I did that. It might have been an early planting. But it just kept growing and never bolted. And then I had some that I planted outside. And when June rolled around, the spinach that was outside the hoop bolted. And it was 105 degrees inside my high tunnel, and the spinach was just doing fine.
Oh.
And so ever since then, I've been real suspicious about the light, the amount of light spinach gets, as far as what causes it to bolt.
Maybe, but I don't know, it seems like the spinach in my garden right now, I'm pretty sure he planted all those seeds at the same time, and just some of them have bolted, and some of them are growing good. I don't know, we'll have to look into that. Could be the variety, could be a lot of different things. Okay, so we kind of talked about secrets for preserving food, and did you have anything else you wanted to say about that, about canning or anything?
Well, there's one trick that I accidentally discovered one time. When I go down to the flooded lake and pick up the cherries, if you just leave them in the box, they get moldy real quick. And I put them... and so what I did, I had a bunch of them in a colander in the refrigerator, and the newer refrigerator, is a pretty good dehydrator, and it actually dried out the cherries part, took about maybe 5% of the moisture out of those cherries.
Oh.
And they still taste fresh when you eat them 2 months later.
Really?
Yeah.
Just from putting them in a colander in the fridge.
And letting them dry out a little bit. So last year I had a pie cherry tree in my backyard that I put some cherries in my dehydrator and ran it, and it got the same result. You know, I could once they dried just a little bit. You know, you don't want to overdo it. You know, you're not trying to create food leather, but just seemed like you reduce that moisture just enough, and then they'll just stand. They you can keep me in the refrigerator on the shelf for quite a long time.
Cool. And then you just eat them raw?
Yeah, just eat them raw, just like you pick them off the tree.
I bet those are good, good, like craisins or, you know.
Not that dry. Not anywhere near that dry, no.
Oh.
Yeah, just like I said, about 5 or 10% of the moisture is all that gets removed. And they taste, you know, and they'll still taste fresh.
Cool.
Yeah.
It's hard to imagine them lasting that long.
like I said, there's.
I mean, like people not eating them because they're so good. You know, cherries are just so sweet. And
well, like if you buy a 5-pound box, you know, it takes you a while to get through them.
That's true. Yep. How about a favorite recipe you like to cook from the garden?
My basic favorite recipe is basically stir fries.
Oh, okay.
You know, yeah, just about anything and everything in the garden, can wind up in a stir fry.
Okay.
And I also grow a lot of Chinese type vegetables too. You know, like pak choi, bok choy, mustard greens, and that kind of stuff.
And then, so how do you cook your stir fry? Do you use like a cast iron skillet or a wok, or do you have any tips?
It's a stovetop wok. Yeah.
You do. Okay. And do you have any secrets for teaching people about that? Like, do you cook your stir fry really hot and with like some olive oil or some sesame oil, or what do you like to put in your for flavor?
I'll use canola oil, and and once in a while I'll buy fresh ground peanut butter, and when the oil floats to the top, I'll pour that off and save that for cooking. For peanut oil.
Oh, really? Interesting. Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's a lot cheaper getting peanut oil that way than it is to go and buy peanut oil that's been...
Right.
You
don't mix that in with the peanut butter, though?
Oh, I don't take it all off. I just, I'll take off about half of the oil, and then I'll stir the rest of it back down.
My secret for that is when you buy the jar of peanut butter, you bring it home, and you put it in your cabinet upside down with the lid, you know, on the shelf.
Oh, yeah.
And then all the oil will rise through the peanut butter to the bottom of the jar. So that when you open it, you don't have all that oil on top, and you stir, and it's kind of gone through the peanut butter one extra time. It just makes it easier to stir it up. So that's my secret tip for if you buy the peanut butter that separates, put it in your closet when you bring it home upside down. Yep. Kind of helpful.
I might try that. Yeah.
All right.
After I pour off a little bit.
Yeah.
They put it in my, got a little tiny, it's about a 4-ounce bottle that I keep in the refrigerator for peanut oil.
I'll bet that makes your stir fry taste like a little more flavorful. I like that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it adds a nice flavor to them, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Do you ever go to the Wrap and Roll down in Whitefish and get their, they have that Thai peanut wrap. Oh, it's so good.
I haven't tried that place yet. No.
Yeah, you should go in there. It's really good. Mm-hmm. How about a favorite internet resource?
I stay away from the internet. I hate the computer.
Okay. How about a favorite reading material, like a book or a magazine? We'll cross off the blog and website part.
One that I found very useful is called Cold Climate Gardening.
Okay, cool.
And let's see. I'm looking to see if I can find my notes here, but it was... give you the author, Lewis Hill.
Okay.
And, but yeah, that's a great, great book for season extending. You know, tells you all about cold frames and things you can do for season extending.
Okay.
A lot of good ideas in there. It's called Cold Climate Gardening.
Okay.
And, that's a good one.
I'll put the link to that in the show notes. So how about, you don't really have a business, but do you have any advice for listeners? Like if they wanted to start a community garden in their area, like what you would do, maybe lessons that you learned from the beginning, any, like how'd you hook up with the fairgrounds or like anything to tell listeners if they wanted to either start one or become a part of one?
Well, one of the lessons that we learned was when we first started cutting lettuce and taking it down to the food pantry, by the time it got there, it was wilted.
Uh-huh.
And so what we found works best for, you know, for us is we'll cut it, cut the, you know, full of lettuce up and then cut it off about a half an inch below the crown and then immediately put it on ice. And putting it on ice seems to keep it from, you know, that seems to shrink up the cells enough so that it won't leach out and won't wilt.
Okay.
And it'll last a lot longer that way. And that's probably the, that was a tip I learned from Todd and Rebecca.
Oh, okay. And if guests are wondering, Todd was my second guest back when I very first started the show. Todd came on from, they have Two Bear Farm down in Whitefish, Montana. Very successful CSA. Those guys are amazing what they do. Now, okay, so tell me a little more about this, because I've always thought about bringing some of our extra produce and things to the food pantry, and I've never thought of taking it to the senior center. They have, and you would have thought, because they have that big community dinner, I've helped out a few times. So then do you like when do they pick up the food, or when do people, like, do you bring it there? Like, is there a pickup day? Like, do you bring it at a specific time? Like, how do you find out about donating to the food pantry? When's a good time? Just walk into the thrift store, right, with your lettuce in your hand, can you?
No. In fact, usually what I do is they, on the second Thursday and the third Thursday of each month, they got two different group of people that they distribute to. And that's the only time that they're open at the pantry, and they start at noon. So I usually bring our stuff in about 11 o'clock in the morning on the second and the third Thursday of each month.
Okay. And where do you bring it? Just to that, to the thrift store? Or is there
right
somewhere
to the
else?
Right to the food pantry itself. Yeah.
Is the food pantry different than the thrift store? Where is the food pantry?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's right next to Eureka Auto.
Oh, okay, back there.
Yeah.
Okay, I know where that is. All right, and then can anybody bring food down there if they have extra produce on Tuesday, on Thursday, at around 11 o'clock?
I think they could. There are some restrictions. Barb tells us that she does not want us washing the vegetables before we bring them in because. That way they know that the vegetables have to be washed when they get them home. And so that's her, you know, her rule there. But yeah, I'll talk to Barb there. Just when you go to the thrift store.
Okay.
For Barb, and then just tell her that you might be interested in bringing in, you know, some donations.
Okay.
And she can kind of fill in on what, you know, what she would, how she would want to present it to, yeah.
Okay. Here we go. My final question. If there was one change you would like to see to create a greener world, what would it be? For example, is there a charity or organization you're passionate about or a project you'd like to see put into action? Like, what do you feel, Jim, is the most crucial issue facing our planet in regards to the environment, either in your local area or on a national or global scale?
I'm probably not that concerned about it, but I do think that I do encourage everybody to try and get into gardening, either urban gardening or even hobby farming, just because it's always good to know where your food comes from. It always, good to get locally grown, food. Plus also, if a person wants to know about, gardening or anything like that, nothing beats learning like experience. And you can read a book, but until you actually do it, there's just things that even the book will tell you all about it, and you can go back to the book and say, oh yeah, that makes sense. Or you just, when you're reading it, you're going to miss out on some, crucial information for gardening and But yeah, it's just I would just encourage everybody, if they can figure out some way to do some kind of garden. One time I took a bunch of scallions from the grocery store and I stuck them in a potted, flower pot.
Oh, cool.
And once they started growing, I got them when sometimes they'll be real tiny. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, these are pretty tiny. So that's what made me decide to do that. And then I let them get up to about the size of my little finger. They improved in flavor so much.
Oh, really?
Just sitting in a clay pot, full of potting soil by the window. Just the quality and the taste, if you can do any kind of, herb garden or, they've got those little kits where they, mm-hmm. You can, have this, adjustable height light on it, and just anything they can do to kind of grow their own herbs or something like that. Be spreading how much they enjoy it and do, they'll get a, get to experience how food can taste better if it's freshly grown.
Mm-hmm. And I like that idea of growing the little herb garden in your window. I always have a basil plant in my window. I use fresh basil all the time. And then I have so much oregano all summer long. Like, I could dry it and have enough to last me the rest of my lifetime each summer. I mean, I just have so much oregano, I don't know what to do with it all.
I discovered that same problem this year.
but yeah, herbs are a great way to start. I like that suggestion. So how about an inspirational tip or quote to help motivate listeners to reach into that dirt and start their own garden?
I'll quote the singer Bruce Anthonson. He's from Big Sandy, side of Great Falls.
Oh, okay.
And yeah, he's a kind of a folk song singer. And he's got a song about homegrown tomatoes, and the quote from the song is, "Two things money can't buy, true love and the taste of homegrown tomatoes."
Aw, that's the perfect way to end this episode. Well, thanks so much for coming on the show today, Jim, and sharing your knowledge. You gave lots of valuable tips to listeners and just some great things to inspire people to get out there and try their own garden, so... Thanks a lot. I went a little longer than I thought it would, so I appreciate you taking Sunday afternoon to share with us.
Yeah, I went longer than I thought too, but anyway, thank you very much, and good luck with your project.
Okay.
Hey everyone, Jackie Byer here, host of the Organic Gardener Podcast. I just wanted to encourage everyone, if you haven't already signed up for our 2015 Gardening Challenge, to go ahead and do it. We'll probably keep it open through the end of June and then probably close it down about July 1st. Surely everybody will have everything in the garden by then. I know I'm always looking at the nurseries for flowers to still plant petunias and things by then, but that's me. They're almost always sold out. So think about what vegetable, what fruit, what flower do you want to plant enough of for a whole season? And we're just saying like 2 or 3 months. Do you want enough carrots to feed your kids or enough broccoli to, feed your household for the summer or enough apples on a fruit tree? What would you plant that would feed your household for one season this year? We're just going one short season, 2-3 months. If you pick lettuce, I think if you planted it now, you'd still have enough for a good 2 months. So think, are we going to eat a salad every night? How many heads of lettuce? What would that cost us? And then, are you going to buy a pack of seeds and then get it in the ground and let us know. I got an even easier Gmail account. So it's just orgpodcast@gmail.com. ORG for organic, orgpodcast@gmail.com. You can email me. You can go to our website. I think you can even go to organicgardenerpodcast.com now. But just in case, Awesome Montana. .com will get you there. AWESOMEMONTANA. That's just my website with, it's got my artist links and some other things up there. And then go to Mike's Green Garden, the Organic Gardener Podcast, right on top. Should say 2015 Garden Challenge. So go to the awesomemontana.com website or email me at orgpodcast@gmail.com. orgpodcast@gmail.com. Tell us, just your first name or username, how many people are in your household, what fruit,
vegetable or flower are you going to grow? Like, what part of the country do you live in, you know? Are you, what state? Or are you out of the state, somewhere else, in another country? How cool would that be? Let us know. We'd love to hear from you. Any feedback about the podcast? I'm so glad you enjoy it. The downloads are just amazing. Everybody's comments have been so supportive. I just can't thank you enough. So have a great day. Jackie Byer here, signing off. Let's get growing.